David Wilcock is a professional intuitive consultant who, since reading Richard Hoagland's The Monuments of Mars in 1993, has intensively researched ufology, ancient civilizations, consciousness, science, and the new paradigms of matter and energy. He is the author of the critically acclaimed trilogy of scientific research works known as the Convergence series, which gives a definitive support to the idea that change in matter, energy, and consciousness is now occurring on Earth and throughout the solar system. Wilcock has appeared all over radio and television, lectured throughout the United States and Japan, published a variety of magazine articles, and appeared on numerous radio talk shows, has his new show on Gaia TV. Welcome back to the program, our good friend, David Wilcock. David, how are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing good, buddy. I send you a virtual fist bump through cyberspace.
Right on, man.
Not to be confused with a terrorist fist jab.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. You know what? Insert joke here, but I hear you, my brother. I do hear you. So, David, welcome back to the program. We've got a crazy week in front of us. We'll be seeing you in just a few short days out in Joshua Tree. And looking forward to that. And like I said during the intro, maybe Friday night we'll get you to jump on the air with us for a few minutes, and we'll be behind the big hall. What do they call it? The sanctuary. We're in the hall behind that one.
Noble Hall.
Noble is the hall that you and I hung out in last year. This one is the Lotus Room. Which is behind the big dome.
Okay.
So, but we'll see you. We'll see you out there.
Yeah, it's a really cool campus. I mean, for those who haven't been there, it's sort of like this Alice in Wonderland psychedelic playground, you know?
You know, they even have a labyrinth. Did you see the labyrinth?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, that place is off the hook. When you go there, and I know that you felt the same thing, and for all of the Fader Knots and the fans of the show that are going to be out there for the first time, when you first set foot on that property, man, you can feel the magic just roll right up your leg. Can't you just feel the energy that's there?
Absolutely. One of the things I'm doing there on Sunday is talking about the history of ET contact at that actual location. I mean, right near where this gathering is, there's giant rock.
Yep.
And it all goes back to the history of George Van Tassel and the Integratron. And you had actual extraterrestrial craft coming and landing, and people being taken on rides through space. Most of that stuff seems to have been discontinued after the late 50s, early 60s, because the people that they did that for ended up getting inappropriately worshipped and also developing ego problems. So when you read The Law of One, which for me is my philosophical basis of all my investigations, it's a channeled work from came in from 1981 to 1984, and I've been able to verify hundreds of specific scientific data points in it. You know, they talked a lot about why those contacts had to be discontinued, because people just couldn't handle it.
I, as you know, I'm a big Van Tassel guy, you know, in giant rock. And you know, I think George and the caretaker, that the German guy that had the property before him, they stumbled upon it in that it was already, you know, going back hundreds and hundreds of years in Indian lore about the mysteries that were going on around there. That it's a very sacred place. That entire valley is completely sacred.
Well, and as you know, then there was a Native American or American Indian prophecy. You know, when you actually talk to real American Indians, they don't like the word Native American, which is really funny.
Right.
I had an American Indian girlfriend at one point, so that's how I know that. But anyway, there's an American Indian prophecy that said that when we got to the end of the age, the rock was going to split in half. And that actually happened. A big chunk of it came off.
Big chunk.
So that's one of the really cool things about the legend of this place.
Hey, David, I know that you're going to have to hold back on the temptation of typing on the keyboard, man, during the show.
Oh, I was just playing with my pen.
I'm just messing with
I was tapping my pen on my glass desktop here.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, sorry about that.
No. It just sounds interesting.
I'll try to be ambient.
Yeah, right. And I want to stay on that Van Tassel subject for a second. I'll say this. Are you taking your guitar to contact?
I probably won't perform. I mean, in venues like this, you don't have time for a sound check and adequate, you know, miking and everything. But
no, I'm talking about you and I playing guitar around a campfire, doing some kumbaya. That's what we should do.
Well, most of my pieces are not really campfire tunes. I work on really intricate fingerstyle stuff. I'm doing a couple Billy Joel songs right now.
Oh, man.
They got all kinds of crazy chords, like A with G sharp in the bass, and D with F sharp in the bass. And I've had to learn how to snap those on really quick in order to make these arrangements work. But it is coming along.
Yeah, that's the problem when you hear a really cool, like Elton John tune or Billy Joel.
That's right.
Piano-based stuff does not play over to guitar, because what you can do with 10 fingers on a piano, you can't do with 5 fingers on a guitar. It's impossible.
And unless you tune down to D, if you have a song that is in D, which a lot of them are, D major or minor, then you got to go up to the fourth string. You can't get your low D. So that also complicates everything.
Yeah, it just sounds funky. It doesn't sound right without the low D. And, you know, for all of you guitar players out there right now, they're going, yeah, man, Jimmy and David know what they're talking about. Jimmy and David are spot on. Yeah. So back to Contact. With George Van Tassel, I've had on his nephew on the show, Chad Meek, and I've had a few different Van Tassel researchers on the show. And always trying to get to the closure side of giant rock and you know, the big, huge events that Van Tassel would throw out there, and the Integratron, it seems like it just stopped. And I'm interested on what you just said there, that it didn't stop because of necessarily any other events. It happened because of them.
Well, I don't want to totally spoil my talk, but I'll give you some of what I'm going to talk about. And that is, we've had a new insider who came forward, military, you know, highly classified work. He was in the he worked with Reagan's cabinet and Reagan directly during his presidency. And this is actually the guy that was feeding Richard Hoagland most of his insider stuff during his heyday. He's still around. So
is this the whistleblower that's going under the pseudonym Corey?
No.
This is somebody else.
I call this guy Bruce.
This is Bruce. Okay.
Yeah, I met him back in Joshua Tree at a conference that Richard Hoagland was hosting. I'd taken 2 years off from conferences. I just had enough.
Right.
Because, you know, all it takes is one or two people following you around and won't stop talking and being really pushy, and that can ruin your whole weekend. So I kind of just was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And when I got back into it, it was Richard talking me back into it. And this guy comes up to me at the end of my talk, throws his arm around my shoulder as I'm walking out of the room, which was strange enough. And he goes, "You're about 75% correct."
Oh, no, really?
And I'm like, "Well, what's the other 25? And he said, "Well, come on out to dinner and I'll tell you." I'm like, "Okay." And he sure told me. I mean, I learned all kinds of stuff from this guy. But just to cut to the quick, the honey trap was set up where Howard Hughes hired females to have sex with guys in the Illuminati. Now we're going way down the rabbit hole real fast.
Right.
The aircraft tycoon, Howard Hughes, paid these women to have sex with these guys. And it was through this that he found out that they consider themselves to be the descendants of extraterrestrial humans. And from the intel that he gathered, he became very interested in this subject and started to go to these giant rock gatherings. And so Howard Hughes was the secret money guy behind why the Integratron got funded in the first place.
Right.
That's where the money came from. The problem was that this device, had it worked properly, and remember, George Van Tassel, for those of you who are listening and don't know this already, he did have telepathic contact with extraterrestrials, and he was brought up into space on their ship, which they don't do anymore for the most part.
That's right.
Back then, they were. And so Van Tassel was given blueprints for a device that, if it had worked, would have created a portal that you could actually use to travel throughout the cosmos. And it's a very interesting building. It's a big wooden dome. And it's got very interesting acoustics in there. And I'm sure, Jimmy, you've been in there innumerable times and tested out the acoustics yourself. It's like if you stand in the middle, it's very strange. And also they do this sound bath thing where you lay down on the floor. Have you ever had that done?
I've heard that they do it really nice out there.
Oh, yeah. All those Tibetan singing bowls with the big crystal bowls.
That's right. That's right.
And you can be literally, just to show you how strange this is, you can be on one side of this dome and somebody on the other side can be whispering to the person next to them and you will hear the whispering. But then people that are like 15 feet away from you on the sides, off to your right and left, you don't hear anything they're saying.
Didn't Queens of the Stone Age record an album out there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a very popular destination. Obviously, it's close to Los Angeles. What people don't really get is that it was intended to be a functioning portal device. And Howard Hughes was given strict instructions by the ETs that he had to make it available to everyone. And then in the final stages, before they'd finished construction, the ETs hadn't given George Van Tassel quite all of the instructions and blueprints necessary to actually make it work. Right there at the end, Howard Hughes says, "We want to use it for the first 2 years just for my elite friends, and then we'll make it available to everybody else." And that was when the ETs pulled the plug.
Wasn't there at some point, wasn't there Tesla coils involved with the Integratron too as well that are no longer there?
Yeah. There was a whole elaborate setup that was intended to create what amounts to a spiraling field within gravity. Most people don't understand that gravity itself is a dynamic moving force that's actually flowing down into the Earth like water, and it's actually what creates the atoms that make the Earth. And this is not some pseudoscience speculation. Actually, physicist Nassim Harriman, who you've probably interviewed, won the Belgian Physics Prize for a theory that showed that gravity has to be the solution to the weak nuclear and strong nuclear forces, what holds the atom together.
Right.
So then that means if you look at the Earth as if it's an atom, then gravity is what's feeding the Earth to keep all the atoms running. And therefore, if it's a fluid-like energy flowing into the Earth, you can create currents in the energy. You can create spin in the current. And that is what pyramids and these types of domes actually do. They create a vortex in the energy. And the really cool part is that if you build these pyramids and domes in the right places on Earth, and then you have the right planetary alignment, you can actually get this interesting phenomenon where electromagnetic energy is transformed into gravitational energy and vice versa. And not only does that give you free energy and anti-gravity, but it also creates traversable wormholes that can be used to travel both through space and through time.
And I think he also referenced, immortality, cell regeneration.
That's correct. That's another function of what this does, because our bodies, I described the energy up until now as dynamic gravity, but it's also the life force that feeds our bodies. And in fact, up to 50% of the health of plants is determined by this energetic flow. And there's lots of simple experiments people can do. Just germinate two sets of seeds, put one inside a pyramid and leave the other one out of the pyramid and wait and see what happens. The pyramid seeds are going to grow a lot faster than the ones that are outside the pyramid.
You know what? To me, it looks like the Integratron, the basic movement of it and everything, it's been well maintained, could probably fire up again. I think you and I should get some Tesla coils together and fire that sucker up. I think that's what we should do. And I'm not joking about this. I think it wouldn't be that difficult, and I think it would really piss a lot of people off. Don't you think we should go out there and see if we can fire it up?
That'd be a cool thing to do. I mean, it would be kind of the equivalent of trying to jumpstart a Model T from the junkyard when you got Lamborghinis around. But
it can be done. Hey, you know what else? There's one other thing that Van Tassel, let's stay on the subject for a second. There's
sure.
One other thing that Van Tassel talked about that I found really, really interesting, and I found a bunch of dead ends. And that was the time machine that he built out in Santa Monica. I found a bunch of dead ends there. The building has to be there. The scientists that he referenced, there's got to be a trail together. I don't want to make a suggestion here in front of a large audience and have them go and rain on our parade. But I think that that needs to be investigated. We need to find out where the time machine was and what the designs were behind it, because his description, because they had a couple of successful tests. If you remember, he talks about recording a 7-year-old television broadcast and stuff that happened prior, 7 years mm-hmm. prior. Do you have any information on that?
I would highly suspect that all pieces of that machine have been completely confiscated and are probably safely sitting in a wooden crate somewhere in Area 51.
Right. Yeah, right. It was so weird to hear him specifically say, very cavalier. Oh, yeah, well, I've got this 5-story building in downtown Santa Monica, and we built this time machine, and it's built based on this formula, and we have this, and this, and we have successfully gone back 7 years. Well, you know, and it was in such a matter-of-fact form that I believe that he built a time machine in downtown Santa Monica.
Once you get the basic physics down, it's actually not that difficult. This is a technology that has been rediscovered redundantly, and when it gets rediscovered, that's when the authorities come in and shut you down. Part of the problem is, and this is kind of, I mean, we're doing PhD level stuff anyway, so why not just keep going? But the real issue is that this spiraling gravity I was talking about does develop a geometric pattern in terms of how the spirals flow. It's not just evenly spiraling all over the Earth. It has currents. And those currents actually form straight lines that are geometric in nature, historically called ley lines. Part of the problem that happens is that if you build any of this type of technology, you will attract a ley line to the technology. It'll branch off. And they have satellites, the cabal, if you want to call them that, military industrial complex, has satellites where they will detect a change in the ley lines. And I'll give you an example. I had one guy who I know personally. He was a free energy scientist. And he shared this story with me in confidence. And you could see the terror in his eyes as he told me this story. He was with a group of guys. They were extremely careful. They had total operational security. Nobody knew what they were doing. They had their machine in 5 different components, and they would only bring the components together when they were going to do a test. They tested it. They put all the components together, and it worked. They left it set up overnight. Then the guy, you know, they figured, what the heck, we'll leave it here. Now we got it working. The guy goes off to his son's basketball game, and he comes back 2.5 hours later, and every single thing in his house had been emptied out, including the shower curtain rod.
What did he have in the shower curtain rod?
Probably weed. I don't know. That's what we did in college.
Yeah, that was the secret hiding spot. Yeah. I always thought I was outsmarting everybody. I guess not.
No, I knew about that one too, man.
What and the thing is, when I had read about the Tesla coils and the Integratron, then I started to connect a couple of dots here back to Tesla. Because Van Tassel wasn't getting the Tesla coil information from a dead man, from Nikola Tesla. That information was coming from off world. So does that mean that Tesla's information was off-world too? Am I reaching when I jump to that kind of conclusion?
But that's part of it, yeah. I would also say it's highly likely that Howard Hughes, through the use of these female couriers, obtained the Tesla patents that had been sequestered by the government. And that they were given to George Van Tassel, and that Tassel, what you're describing in Santa Monica, most likely was him using a combination of hints from ETs and practical blueprints that he got through this back channel that was coming through Howard Hughes. That's my guess.
There's something more to this story. And with George Van Tassel, he is somebody that I just think was completely squashed. And
no question.
Yeah. When we look at ufology, there's certain stories that we can follow and get into, and there's teeth to the story. with Van Tassel, it seems like he was almost erased from history. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that. Most people have never even heard of Van Tassel, and there's a reason for that.
Well, this strikes to the heart of the cover-up. And you got to remember that we're dealing with religious fundamentalists. The people that run our planet are religious fundamentalists, and it's not Christianity, and it's not Judaism, and it's not Islam. It's Luciferianism. And we're all going to have to sit back and take in the fact, whether we like it or not, you know, playing ostrich doesn't make this go away. The people who have the money, the people who are running the military-industrial complex at the highest levels, they are fundamentalist Luciferians. They believe that Lucifer's the good guy, that the average person is the enemy, that they're useless eaters and worthless sheep, and that they deserve to have dominance over this planet and that we should all serve them. And they're willing to have some of us here, but a lot less than there are now. That's their plan.
Somebody just tweeted, Cortana just tweeted, the secret to the Integratron, guitars and Tesla coils. real quick, we're going to be up against a break in a few minutes. And I want to ask you this question before we get to the break. When it comes to Bruce, and you sit down and you're listening to him, we all know about what goes on out there in our little circle of friends. And so you have to listen to somebody with much skepticism. But there was something that Bruce said to you that made you take everything at face value. What was it?
Oh, it wasn't just something. When you talk to somebody who's real, they just burst with information. They have so many things where you go, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And I heard that before from this guy, and I heard that before from this guy. And oh my God, you told me that, but I didn't hear that part. It's like there's a whole corpus of data, and it's huge. And he was pinging off stuff that I'd already heard from insiders and had never made public left and right. And the thing is, when you've met 30, 40 different high-level insiders, as I have, and these are people who, in some cases, have never come forward with anybody else but me, and you remember, you know, things that they've told you over the course of countless hours of conversation, everybody starts bringing up the same stuff. You say, well, there's got to be some kind of common ground here. So I could give you some specific anecdotes of things he told me that were really cool, but there's a lot of them.
Okay. I mean, it's... Lead us into the break with one, because I know you, David. I know you got one. Lead us into the break with one.
One of the tastiest things is stuff that he told me he was only authorized to say on behalf of the good guys in the U.S. government. System and inside our Earth. There's stuff everywhere. And I'm going to be showing that this weekend at Contact in the Desert. What the pictures of what they left behind, where it is, what we're looking for, who they were, what did they do, what wars did they fight. And we can talk about a lot of this stuff. I mean, the cabal is being defeated and all this stuff is now supposed to come out.
Can I get on the guest list? Can you squeeze me in the back door? Can I get backstage? Can I get
if
an
you
autograph?
See check out the pictures of the moon Ceres, which is actually a planetoid in the asteroid belt.
Yep.
And they've got these two glowing spots on it, and you'll notice it looks like the surface underneath the dirt is glowing all the time. And what's happening is there is actually an intelligent city under there that's glowing. And as the dirt comes off, you're seeing more of the glow. And that's one of the things that the actual cabal is getting ready to use, because they are going to throw disclosure at us. They've got no other moves left to make. They're going to see which way the public opinion swings. Are they going to have awe or are they going to have fear? And they're prepared to use this for their benefit regardless of which way the pendulum swings. Or so they're planning, but I don't think it's going to work out for them.
Didn't you find it curious when it came to Ceres and those pictures got out that there was no explanation? It was like total silence from the government and from NASA and from JPL. Nobody had anything to say.
Well, it's not total silence. They're making a lot of leading statements. There's a lot of things like, isn't this strange? What do you think this is? It's a signal beacon calling us out to the stars. You know, all this weird stuff.
I mean,
Yeah.
It's like watching a child lie and having their hand over their mouth, and you can see they're lying because they don't want the words to come out.
No, the chocolate chip is all around their lips. Right? It's all melted. Yeah, exactly right. You know, the Oreo cookies are stuck between their teeth, and they're saying, what?
What cookies? What cookies? I don't know what you're talking about.
Let's take a quick break. We'll stop right there. David, a couple of questions just popped into Twitter. First one from David. He says, is it true you live a rather isolated life? I heard you live on a compound type place. Is that is that rumor?
A compound?
A compound, security, guard towers.
Oh, my God. No.
not quite.
I rent a house. I don't own a house. You know, I have an old car. People come up with these funny stories. It's really funny.
I picture you in a motorcade. That's what I see. Allison says, when the event occurs, what happens to the little lives on this planet? The cats, the dogs, the fishes, the birds, the trees?
Well, okay, that question implies that people know what she's talking about, and so a certain amount of backstory would be required. That's not a question you just want to go crashing into.
Right.
We can talk about the event, but it's to do it properly, I think we need to have some setup, and that's more like a advanced question we could get to later. If you have something that's quicker, why don't we do that first?
What do you do, you know, a lot of your fans are listening to this show, too, that have never heard Fade to Black before, and you, when you speak to them, it's not often that you do this, you know, like live, you know, going around the world.
That's true.
Is everything always okay in your life, or are you at risk? I mean, you talk to whistleblowers, but in the bigger picture, you're a whistleblower yourself. Is your life in danger, or do you feel okay?
Well, that's an interesting question, because the only reason why I'm alive is because I have spiritual protection. If I did not have spiritual protection, I would have been assassinated many, many times over by now. Or only once, but there would have been many opportunities. It's not for lack of trying. They have definitely... I have really pissed people off, and people who you don't want to piss off unless you have the ability to defend against them. So this gets into why haven't I been killed? And the reason why I haven't been killed is that the universe ultimately is governed by benevolent hyperdimensional beings. The idea of them flying around in a UFO is laughable. They don't need anything like that. They can think themselves to anywhere in the universe they want to be. They don't have bodies as we think of it. If you were going to see them, they probably just look like an orb or a sphere of energy. They're extremely intelligent. They have the ability to simultaneously monitor potentially millions of people's thoughts and actually watch for trends like fractals within large groups of people and how those people are thinking. They tried to explain to me at one point by saying that if you could imagine watching this matrix of televisions, and each television has a different program on it, and yet you're able to track all of them at the same time, and not only that, but to start making spontaneous allegories and analogies between what you're seeing on all the different screens. That's the type of overview that they have of us. And if you want to get into biblical terms, in terms of angelic hierarchy, here we're probably talking about seraphim and cherubim. So those are even higher than archangels.
Right.
And they are real. Now, Ancient Aliens, the show on History Channel that I'm on, they do not allow me to say angels. They don't want that word used at all. They only want me to say extraterrestrials. So that's been a point of contention, but that's a network decision. So there's a certain amount of my information that gets out on Ancient Aliens, but all this kind of stuff you're never going to see on that show. They just don't want it to be on their network. And I think they're pretty upset about it, and that's the major reason why.
Yeah, well, you're up against producers, and it's kind of funny. I had the same experience with Hangar One in that it's their show. It's not
right.
It's not my show.
Right.
It's not your show. And, you know, you could be blowing blood vessels, but it's not going to change the concept for the show.
No, so it's important to understand that, first of all, we're all one and the same being. We're all part of this one infinite consciousness that made the universe. And in my talks, and I am going to be going through this over the weekend at Contact in the Desert, there's new science has come out showing that space and time, matter and energy as we know it, do not exist except as an emanation from a singular geometry, ultimately, is what it is. And that geometry, even though you could define it with coordinate points and say, here is this three-dimensional object that the universe is made from, that object in and of itself does not have space or time as we normally think of it.
I have, you know, I've seen you speak a few times, and Conscious Life, Contact in the Desert, and so forth. And I don't watch you. I watch the audience, right? And I'm I'm serious.
Yeah.
And everybody has got pen and paper out, and I'll watch you up on stage, and you'll say, "Okay, take out your pen and paper and write this down." And I'll watch 300, 400, 500 people bust out the pen and start writing. Is it like that every time you speak? Are they that focused?
Yes. I try to monitor my whole audience, and I keep looking at everybody's faces. And if there's one person who's distracted or looks bored or starts falling asleep, I will alter the whole talk around that person.
Oh, that ain't right.
No, it is. Because what happens is I get a better the audience gets a better performance out of me because I'll fight for that one guy.
Right.
I'll fight to bring him back.
Well, it's kind of like playing guitar live. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. Oh, Beckbeat just tweeted. He says, "Please ask David why he gave up playing the drums. How could you do that? It's not healthy." I didn't know you played drums.
Yeah, first of all, nobody said I gave up playing the drums. I have a Roland TD-7 really nice
electronic kit,
yeah. I don't have an acoustic kit anymore, but I also think it's presumptuous to live in a residential area and blast out on the drums. Okay, so for those who don't know, I majored in psychology, and I had a few different minors. I minored in philosophy, English lit, and I also took jazz classes. So in my jazz classes, I learned how to do extreme drum pyrotechnics. And people have heard me say this. I have never filmed myself doing it, and I probably should. I could go on there right now, even though I don't practice very much anymore, and I could do a solo that is only people who are real extreme technical perfectionists